Tonight's shiur is for the week of Parshas Tezriya Metzora. We begin with a fellow who was into Judaica. He's buying and selling Judaica items. And we'll call him Reuven. So he traveled to Chutz Laretz for business. He was searching around for artifacts, some rare Judaic items, which he could buy and resell at a profit. So he went to the certain area where there are a number of stores that had such heirlooms. So he went, he spent a number of hours, went from one place to another. So finally, couldn't find anything. He decided to leave. Just as he was about to leave the area, he noticed a small little store at the end of the road, and he hadn't really gone in there yet. So he snooped around, looked around, didn't see anything very interesting. He was about to leave the little store, and his eye caught a bowl that was on the ground near the entrance to the store, and it looked like a very rare bowl that was very fancy with all types of fancy molding, etc. And in his estimation, it was quite a rare piece. It was worth quite a lot of money. So he went to the side, he pulled out his catalog, he searched, and he sure enough he found the piece in his catalog. And he's like, wow, this is worth thousands of dollars. This is bull. So he was considering, you know, what he was going to do to buy it. And he went back to the store. And what did he see? He saw the owner of the store fill up this bowl with milk. And this cat was drinking from it. So Reuven's immediately put two and two together, and he figured that this guy obviously has no idea how much this bowl is really worth. He wouldn't be using it to feed his cat with. But now Reuven thought to himself, how am I gonna purchase this bowl from this yid? On the one hand, you know, if I'm going to offer him, you know, thousands of dollars for it, he's going to say, what? He's going to pick up on it, and he's going to ask for more, and it's going to... So he had an idea. What did he do? He approached the store owner, and he said, excuse me. He says, I noticed your cat over here. He says, yeah. He says, I'd like to purchase your cat. How much are you charging for your cat? And the store owner said, this cat? It's yours for $1,000. He goes, what? $1,000 for a cat? That's outrageous. He goes, listen, that's the price. You want it, take it, not leave it. He says, oh, come on, $1,000? He goes, yeah, so. So Reuven, you know, thought to himself, okay, it's worth it, though, according to his plan. So he said, fine, okay, I'll buy it. And he gave the store owner $1,000. Okay, next step, he said to the store, listen, you know, I bought your cat, and I noticed he likes to drink from this bowl over here. How would you like to sell me this bowl? I'll give you $50 for it, you know. It's a lot of money for this bowl, but $50. So the store owner said, no, nothing doing. So Reuven started getting nervous. What do you mean? I'm giving you $50 for this bowl. He goes, no, I'm not going to sell the bowl. Okay, $100 for your bowl. No. $200. No. $500. $1,000. No, no, no. I'm not selling this bowl. He goes, come on. I don't understand. It's a bowl. How can you? I'm giving you $1,000. How come you're not taking the bowl? So the guy said, listen. He said to Reuven, I'll let you in on a secret. I sell a little bit of, you know, Judaica here, you know, in my store. He says, but my main income is from selling cats. You see, you're not the only one that fell into my trap. You know, people see those bowl and they pretend to buy the cat. They pay me for my cat, and then they want to get the bowl, and that's how I make my money. You're not the first one. Anyways, that's the story. What's the question? So now Reuven said to the store owner, "Okay, now I want my money back." He says, "Why?" He says, "Listen, come on. Everybody knows that a plain old cat is not worth $1,000. So you ripped me off. You took me for a ride. It's called, in halakhic terms, onah. You can't sell something for a price, weigh something which is way overpriced. Person can renege on the deal, and I'm reneging on the deal. I want to give your cat back. I want my $1,000 back. Because obviously a cat is not worth $1,000. Question is Reuven's taina good taina? Is he allowed to claim onah and receive $1,000 in return? The answer is found in the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, Parshas Toldos, with our famous Maisa with Yaakov and Esav. As we know, Esav came in from the field. He's hungry, starving. And Yaakov says to him, "You want some of these lentils? No problem. Sell me your Bechor. So Esav says, "No problem. Take the Bechor. Just give me those lentils." And the Torah says it was a deal. Vimkor es Bechor asol Yaakov. So asked Or HaChaim, "What about Onah?" Like we said before, everybody knows that a Bechor is worth more than a bowl of lentils. So Esav got ripped off. And when person, you know, is overcharged or he sold something that, you know, that's worth a lot of money and he only got a little bit for it, he's allowed to claim onah. The seller can say, I was cheated. So how could it be that the sale was a good sale of the Bechor? So answers the Or HaChaim that there's one important point to be mentioned, and that is that which we say there is onah, that's only if the buyer or the seller was fooled, was cheated, and he didn't know about it. However, a person understands the real value, and even so, he decides to sell or pay a price that is not the correct value, but he understands what he's doing. That's not onah. So therefore, when it came to Esav, says the Or HaChaim, he knew exactly how much the Bechor was worth and that Yaakov is selling it to him for lentils. He knew it and he didn't care. He said, "Take it. Even if it's a Bechor." He said, "I don't care about Bechor." He knew that what he was paying for it, what he was getting paid for it, but he didn't care. So fine, if he knew, then he was Moichel. So Mele, it's the same thing over here. Reuven, when he paid the $1,000 for the cat, he knew that the cat is not worth $1,000 when he paid for it. So he can't claim, "Oh, no, I was cheated. It wasn't." You're right. If you thought that this was a special cat and it wasn't, you knew it was a regular cat and their cats are not worth $1,000, but you wanted to, you know, pay the $1,000, Reuven. Why? Because you thought you can trick the guy into selling the bowl that was worth a lot of money. So since Reuven knew what he was doing, so that's not called onah. That's number one. And even though he could say, "Yeah, but I only bought the cat in order to get the bowl, and since I couldn't get the bowl, so I'm not interested in the cat," that's called Dvarim Shebelev. And we have a rule, Dvarim Shebelev, Einam Dvarim. As the Shulchan Aruch says, in Chosen Mishpat, Simen Reish Zayin, that a person sells something, if he in his heart had certain ideas, that's in his heart. If you want to, it to be to take part in it to be part of the deal, you have to say it out. So you have to make a condition. If you would have said, "Look, I'm only selling you this cat if I can get the bull," okay, that's a different story. But he didn't make any conditions. He just bought the cat. He bought the cat, even though in your heart you thought that it was only in order to get the bull. But that's Dvarim Shebelev, and we don't take into account halachically things that you had in your heart. Therefore, in conclusion, the sale of the cat was a good sale because Reuven knew what he was doing and what he was paying for, and he has to keep the cat. He can't get his money back, and the owner, of course, keeps his bull. Even so, the owner did not act in a very upright way, tricking people like that with it. That's a different story. Okay? That he shouldn't be selling cats in order to make a lot of money using his bull. That's a not proper thing to do. But we're talking here about the Ikar HaDin, the halacha, and in fact, the sale of the cat was a good sale. Next, we have a little maisa with Rav Hagon, Rabbi Avram Ganachovsky Zatzal, that he was very, very makpid, not only in his the keeping of the mitzvahs and halacha, but also he was very, very makpid in making sure he wouldn't hurt person's feelings or make them feel uncomfortable in any way. He was very, very didactic in these areas. So once a Talmid told over the following story. It was the Motzei Shabbos, and they can come home from shul, and Rav Avram was, of course, to make Havdalah now. So they gather around the table to make Havdalah, and in walks a couple, young couple, that they came to ask some advice from Rav Ganachovsky. So he invited them, fine. He says, I just have to make Havdalah, and then, I'll speak with you. No problem. What was the problem, though? This couple were just, just beginning to, keep Torah mitzvahs, and this woman wasn't covering her hair. And they're standing around the table to make Havdalah, and the Talmud was wondering, what is Rav Avram going to do? Why? Because one is not supposed to make a bracha in front of a woman, a married woman, whose hair is uncovered. But to tell this woman to leave, or if he'd leave and go somewhere else to make up, that would make this woman feel very uncomfortable. And the Talmud knew that was the last thing that Rav Avram would do. So how is he going to get out of this bind? So what happened? Rav Avram takes the kos of yain in his hand, and he says to the people around the table, he says, with your permission, I'm going to turn my back because I'd like to make Havdalah facing Yerushalayim. So he takes the cup, turns his back, of course, away from the woman and everybody else, and says Havdalah facing Yerushalayim. Well, the people in the family were wondering, wow, that's a new chumrah. Never heard that before. Say, Abdullah facing Yerushalayim. However, this Talmud knew full well, there's no such minhag, that Rav Avram did that in order not to hurt this woman's feelings, not to, stump turn around or tell her to leave. He was very, very respectful, as we said, and cared about other people. And therefore, he thought that this ingenious method of not having to say the bracha in front of this woman without at the same time hurting your feelings in any way. Next, we have a maisa of a yid that he had a few errands to run. So his first stop was the bakery. Went to the bakery and he bought a couple of cheesecakes. He paid the 30 shekels for each. He had them wrapped up, put in a bag, and he left the bakery. Okay, next stop was the bank. He had to make a deposit or whatever. And fine, walks into the bank and he notices it's a little bit of a line. Okay, so he takes his place in the line, and he's standing there, and the line is moving quite slowly. where this person was standing, he was next to a, there was like a he's standing next to like a counter. And so he put the cheesecakes, that were in the bag on the counter next to him while he was waiting. And he was leaning on, put his hand on them, whatever. So, little did he know that behind him in line were a couple of ganavim. And they saw how he had taken his bag, put it on the counter, and put his hand on the bag. So they assumed that in this bag was a lot of cash, and this man was going to make a very large deposit. And that's why he's, putting his hand on this bag. Meanwhile, there was nothing in there except two cheesecakes. But they didn't know this. They were planning of how they could snatch the bag of quote-unquote money away. So what did they do? One of them approached the fellow and said, excuse me, sir, I wonder if you can do me a favor. He says, what's that? He says, well, I'm really bad at math, and I have these bills that I want to deposit, and I have some 10, some 20s and 50s and 100s, and I every time I count it, I get to a different number, and I want to know exactly how much money I'm depositing. Can you do me a big favor and count this money for me? So he said, sure, no problem. So he hands him the bunch of bills. And, of course, in order to count, you need two hands. So he took his hand off the cheesecakes and holds the bills in his hands and starts counting. 20, 40, 50, starts counting. So in the meantime, as he's counting, the gunner's partner puts his hands on the bag, slides away the bag, and which he thought was a bag full of money. And then both of them ran off, jumped on the motorcycle, and drove away. Of course, they were in for a big surprise when instead of finding a lot of money, they found a couple of cheesecakes. But that's not our Shiloh over here. What is our Shiloh? That this fellow now was, he paid 60 shekels for these two cheesecakes, and which these ganavim stole, but they left him with a bunch of bills, which totaled a sum of 1,000 shekels. So he came to ask, now what? What do I do with these, with this 1,000 shekels? Can I keep it? I mean, they ran off and took my cheesecakes, 60 shekels worth, but I have 1,000 shekels of theirs, but they're ganavim. They tried to be ganavim. What's the din? So, one might have thought to say that he can keep the 1,000 shekels. Why? Because the ganavim, they were basically mafkir them. They made it hefker. They thought, here, let him keep the 1,000 shekels because we're going to steal thousands of shekels. Of course, that wasn't the case. But when they gave him the money, they said, here, keep that. And they left, so they were mafkir the money. And they gave up hope here and ran away. So when somebody makes something hefker, so you can keep it. So that's what one might say at first glance. However, that's not the case. Why? Because Tosfos says in Psachim Daf Nun Zayin that hefker b'taus is not considered hefker. In other words, they only made this. Money, the 1,000 shekels hefker, because they thought they would be able to make a lot more money by stealing the bag. In the end, they didn't. Now, had they known that this was two cheesecakes, of course, they would not have made this 1,000 shekels hefker. So that's called hefker betaus. And hefker betaus is not called hefker, so that is not a tine. And furthermore, they were misyayish, they gave up hope of this 1,000 shekels, lavdavka. Could be that's not the case, because they saw this, the person they stole the cakes from, When they gave him the Talmud, they saw it looked like a very, you know, religious person, a frum guy, big long beard, whatever, and they figured he's a tzaddik, and I'm sure he'll give us our money back if we ask him for it. So they probably weren't mityayish. They probably didn't give up hope on 1,000 shekels either. Therefore, what's the din? Of course, the fellow now 1,000 shekels, he's allowed to take off the 60 shekels from this amount, because after all, they did steal his 2 cheesecakes. So that money from the 2 cheesecakes he can take for himself, of course. But the rest, the 940 shekels, since we said the ganavim did not necessarily make it hefker, so he should put the money in a gamach or something of that sort, until the ganavim come and claim their money. But in fact, if they do come, perhaps in chutzpah, and ask for their money back, so if they do, and this fellow really does have to return at least 940 shekels out of the 1,000, keeping, of course, the 60 for his cheesecakes. Okay, the next case, one has to halt cup, as they say. It's a little bit complicated, but not too bad. Begins with Reuven. Reuven had lent a sizable amount of money to Shimon. How much? 1,000 shekels. Fine. So what happened? Came the day to return the money, and Shimon calls Reuven and says, "Reuven, I have your money for you, and I'd like to return it today. Where can I meet you?" So Reuven says, "Listen, I have a really, really busy day today, and I'm not going to be home until later. But I'm very happy that you're returning the money, because I really need the money, actually. So I have an idea. Just put the money in an envelope and stick it in my mailbox, you know, where I live, in my building. Stick it in my mailbox, and no." So Shimon said, "Are you sure? I mean, aren't you scared that maybe it's going to get stolen from your mailbox?" So he said, "Nah, don't worry about it. It's very deep, and you put it in properly, it's going to, you know, the ganav can't get it. Nothing to worry about." So Shimon says, "Fine. That's what you want. No problem." Okay. Ad kan hakafalav. Next, so Shimon takes 1,000 shekels. And he's looking around for an envelope. So he sees he has an envelope that there was a wedding invitation that was given to him. It had his name on it, you know, to Lichvot Shimon, such a, my good friend Shimon. So he said, so he took out the invitation and instead put the 1,000 shekels in this envelope. And then he made his way to Reuven's place. And as Reuven told him to do, he then placed it in his mailbox. Good. Ad kan hakafa beis. Next, what happened? Reuven's wife, she came home before Reuven did. And she, first thing, as she usually does when she comes home, she goes to the mailbox. She opens the mailbox and looks at their mail. She sees a letter, an envelope that says, "Lichvod to my dear friend Shimon." She says, "My dear friend Shimon? So my husband's name is not Shimon. My husband's name is Reuven. So I guess somebody by mistake put this envelope in our box." So she thought to herself, who could this really belong to? She goes, I think the upstairs neighbor, I think his name is Shimon. I'll put it into his box. Fine. So she puts it into the upstairs neighbor's mailbox. Then comes Hakafa Dalit, and the upstairs neighbor opens up his mailbox only to find this letter. Now, his name actually wasn't Shimon, really. It was Shemaya. Close enough. Anyways, he sees this envelope that looked like a wedding invitation, and with the money in it, And he looks at the envelope. He goes, "Lichvod Shimon, my dear friend. My name's not Shimon. Who's putting these things in my box?" Ah, he gets all upset. And he throws the envelope straight into the garbage. Finally, Reuven comes home that evening. The mailbox is empty, but he says, "Oh, I'm sure my wife is usually there, got the mail." So he says to his wife, "Where's today's mail?" So she says, "Here." He says, "Wait a minute, but wasn't there an envelope?" She goes, "What do you mean? I was expecting an envelope from my Shimon." She goes, "Well, there was an envelope, but it was addressed to Shimon, and I thought it was the upstairs name." Uh-oh. Anyways, they realize what happened. They ask the upstairs neighbor, "Where is that envelope?" He says, "It's gone. It's in the garbage." So now we have Reuven, Shimon, Reuven's wife, and the upstairs neighbor all coming in front of the Rav to ask, now what? Who is responsible for this 1,000 shekels? Perhaps it's Reuven's fault for telling him to put the money in the envelope and put it into his box. Perhaps it's the wife's fault for bringing it giving it to the upstairs neighbor. Perhaps Shimon Bichlal for putting the money in an envelope that had his own name on it. Or maybe the upstairs neighbor for throwing the envelope in the garbage. Who is right? Who's in the wrong? Well, we begin with Halach and Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, Simen Kuf Kaf, Sif Aleph, which is actually a Gemara, that if a person lends money to his friend, and when it came time to pay, the lender said to the borrower, "Here, throw me the money, my money, throw it to me." So the borrower said, "Okay," and he threw him the money, and then something happened to the money. I don't know, the wind blew it away, or a dog jumped and grabbed it and ate it, whatever. The money never got to the lender. What's the din? So the din is, the borrower is putter. Why? He just did what the lender told him to do. He told him, "Here, throw me my money." He threw it to him. He just did what he was told. So too, we can relate it back to our case over here. When Reuven told Shimon, "Here, you know, you could put the money in envelope, put it into my box," even though maybe that's not the most responsible way of returning a debt, but since Reuven told Shimon to do that, so Shimon is pater. He shouldn't have put it in an envelope that was addressed to him from an invitation. Okay, perhaps that wasn't the smartest thing in the world to do, but you can't hold him responsible and say, no, he has to, you know, repay the debt back. No, that's already, not a smart thing he did, but Maisa, he did put the money in an envelope, he did put it in Reuven's box, as Reuven had told him to do. So Shimon is basically clean. Now what about Reuven? Now Reuven, he was the one that was really not responsible. Okay, he felt that the post box is safe from Ganavim, which maybe it was, but you know, he should have at least minimally spoke to his wife and told them, warned her, said, "You know, I'm going to be getting a letter. It's going to from there with money in it. So be careful, you know, whatever with the mail, something. Let her know what's going on." So the fact that he didn't say anything to his wife, so he caused himself damage. So between Reuven and Shimon, Shimon is pretty much, even though he didn't act with tremendous caution, but he's pater. He doesn't have to repay the loan. Reuven, he's basically the one who is irresponsible. However, now what about the upstairs neighbor? So, here, the upstairs neighbor is also at fault. Why? Because he gets an invitation. Now, we had 1,000 shekels in there. you know, the minimum denomination is 200. So it had to be, minimally, there were like five bills in there. It probably did not feel like a wedding invitation, number one. Number two, okay, it wasn't addressed to you. You don't go throw it in the garbage. So you find out, how did it get there? Who does it belong to? So he definitely did not act in the proper way by taking this letter and throwing it in the garbage. And therefore, to mechayvim midinei adam, it's probably just a grama. But as we know, a grama that's is still chayev midinei shemayim. And therefore, the final conclusion, the final psak given in this case, therefore, is that even though Shimon is pater, Reuven did not act so responsible, but probably the upstairs neighbor, Shmaya, he is the most guilty here, and at least Midine Shemaim, he should have to pay 1,000 shekels back to Reuven. That's the end of tonight's shiur, and so we read this week of the sin of Lashon Hara and its repercussions, but we also read about the Tahara of the Metzorah, so we should all be zoiche to a Tahara Shlema, which will lead us to the Gula Shlema, Bimhera V'yameinu.